This really should have been part of the last lesson, but we got carried away and ran over time last time, and today we may be just a bit short. But the story of Genesis 27 is the making of a man of God. And the first thing you have to know when it comes to the making of a man of God is that pain is a very strong tool that God uses. I began this section by quoting A.W. Tozer, that those who God uses greatly, he first hurts deeply. There is something that we can only learn in pain that we cannot learn any other way. Kind of clean up something that Will Rogers once said, that some people learn from books and other people learn from watching others. But other people just have to learn by grabbing the electric fence for themselves. And that's the way it is in life. And what is sad is when people don't learn anything from the pain that they have suffered.
I think you said
chapter 27. 37. 37, Genesis 37. And that's what's sad. I remember hearing an interview with Elizabeth Taylor. I think it was after she had finished with husband, was it number 6 or number 5, somewhere up. It's a legendary number. And she said, the problem with all my marriages was the men I married. She hadn't learned one bloomin' thing. What was the common denominator in all of her marriages? She had not learned anything. I told you about my mentor, who I rise up to call blessed, Dr. Wendell Johnston, president of William Tyndale College. I got to know him and his wife Martha rather well, and he took me under his wing. And I remember calling him one day and said, I think I've made a terrible mistake here. And after I explained everything that I had done, all he did was ask one question. Did you learn anything? Boy, I never forgot that. You never want to waste your tears. You'd never want to waste the pain. You want to learn something from them. And what is tragic about so many today is that they refuse to learn from the history of others, and they're going to go and try to reinvent the wheel, and it's tragic. And Joseph, the first step in God making Joseph is not only to choose him, but then to hurt him. And Joseph is going to hurt. And at each stage in the story, as we go through the life of Joseph, we're going to see that you would think being rejected by his father and brothers is enough, but no, it gets worse. He has some success under Potiphar, and then he's rejected again. And so he gets down and down and down. That's how God works. I don't know why that is the method he uses, other than I know that he found it effective. Now, we are in the middle of this story, and we're down at verse 9, where Joseph has already suffered the envy of his brothers. He is clearly the one his father's chosen and loves. And there's favoritism in this family. There is a history of favoritism in this family. And it just creates all sorts of painful, painful experiences. You love all your children, even though you may be closer to some than others, you love them all equally the same, and you try to treat them all the same, even though you have to make some allowances that this person likes this and this person doesn't like that. And so you have to learn how to express your love in different ways to these people, but you must love them all equally. But Joseph has already been chosen as the son that his father loves the most, and he's created this envy among the family. And we talked about the sin of envy, that envy is the sin that says, you should not have anything I cannot have. By the way, Thomas Sowell said envy plus rhetoric equals social justice. And I think there's something to be said for that. You should not have something I cannot have. Therefore, it should be taken away from you. And even if I don't get it, at least you don't have it. That is envy. It's a very powerful sin because, as Thomas Sowell has noted, it is the sin that can disguise itself as a virtue. The virtue being social justice. So Joseph is going to suffer from the envy of his sons. He's already told them this story, that all of these sheaves have bowed down to him. Now, and they hate him for it. But now in verse 9, he says, then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers. You would have thought that he'd have enough sense to stop after the first story. The first story created all sorts of problems for the family, that he is going to be eventually the one which all the other brothers are going to bow down to. Boy, that went down badly. And so he's going to tell them another dream. Now, in the ancient world, these dreams are important. The ancient world thought of dreams as being not the result of something you ate last night, but rather a divine communication from God. So he now says, I've got this second dream, and in chapter 42, we're going to see that God validates these dreams by giving him a second time. So we have a second dream here, and he wants everybody to pay attention. Notice he says in verse 9, behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, that word behold repeated means pay attention to this. Now, the latter one, we had an agricultural vision of the sheaves bowing down to his sheaf. Now we have an astronomical one, astronomy one. The sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to him. So Joseph relates the second dream, which is even greater than the first, because it now has the sun and the moon, referring to his mother and father, are going to bow down to them. Now, this bowing down is submission, not worship. Verse 10, then he told it to his father and his brothers. His father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And the brothers were jealous of him, and his father kept the saying in mind. Wow. Again, Joseph receives a negative response from everybody, this time including even his father, Jacob, who rebukes Joseph, which must have hurt Joseph deeply. The more we love and respect someone, the deeper the pain we feel when they rebuke us. That's true. There are some criticisms you can just blow off. You know, that person never cared for me anyway, or that person just has a sin in their life and this is reminding them of it, or you can blow certain things off. But when you find someone that you truly love and respect, and they take you aside and say, I've got a problem with what you're doing, that can hurt most. That hurts the most. And we should pay attention to those if the person that we love is wise. So why does Jacob rebuke Joseph? Perhaps Jacob rebukes Joseph because he thought that Joseph was attempting to usurp his authority in the family, as the head of the family. But notice the significance here. We read, sadly, that the brothers responded with jealousy. But Jacob's response is more thoughtful, since he ponders what Joseph said, perhaps because he knew him to be wise, and because he thought maybe that God had appeared to him in a dream. Jacob and we, if we are wise, ponder the meaning of God's revelation, which is the Bible for us. God wants you and me to think. Thomas Traherne, a mystic in the 1200s, wrote, "To think is hard. To think correctly is harder." I do not find our society to be one in which people are doing much thinking. I think what we find is we rearrange our prejudices and we call it thinking. We rearrange our desires and call them thinking. The most lucrative business, or at least one of the most lucrative businesses, is Hollywood. Hollywood is all about amusement. To muse means to think. The alpha primitive in front of it negates it. So what we want to do is not think. We want to be amused. And it's sad that in churches today, people are not thinking either. They're not thinking through the consequences of what they believe. They're not thinking through the validity of what they believe. They're just not thinking. They want to feel. Now, feeling is important. And those of us who put more emphasis on the mind have a tendency to look down at people who have heart. But we are to love the Lord our God with all our what? Heart and soul and mind and strength. We need to do all of that. The heart gives us the motive energy to do things. The mind tells us what it is that we should be doing. I wish you could have met my father. David was talking about his father and his abilities, and I could see the respect David had for his father. I have a tremendous respect for mine. Dad taught me a little doggerel. You want to hear it? You're going to hear it anyway. God has given us two ends to use. One to think with, and one to sit with. Our success in life depends on which end we use. Heads, we win. Tails, we lose. Don't you love that? God has given us two ends to use. One to think with, one to sit with. Our success in life depends on which end we use. Heads we win, tails we lose. I read a book, it's probably severely out of date. I think it was written probably in the late 70s by Neil Postman, who was a professor of communications at New York University. The title of the book is Amusing Ourselves to Death. I took it out of the library and read it, and some time ago reread it, and still a lot of what he says is true. About the importance of television, he said, and this says this is a profound insight. He said that the problem with religious television is, number one, after the program is over, something else comes on. So it's not a permanent place to worship God or meet God. And because television is such a visual medium, we don't see God. We see the speaker. God comes across as a second banana off somewhere else. And the true star of the program is the speaker. The cult of personality, evangelicalism reeks with the sin of that. But we need to think, not just worship our heroes. And it's interesting. You remember in Mark chapter 4, Jesus told parables. And then later, his disciples came to him and said, explain to us why you speak parables. So he tells the meaning real plainly to them. And, oh, we're happy you told us exactly what you mean. But why do you speak in parables? The reason why he spoke in parables to people, especially to unbelievers. You want to know why he spoke parables to unbelievers? You think it's to make things clear. Not according to Mark 4. He said, I tell a parable in which the truth is spoken, but it is disguised in the parable so that people have to think about it. And the people who diligently wish to think about what God is teaching, they'll get the meaning of the parable. But the person who's really not interested, he stays at the surface level of the parable. You remember earlier I talked about Lincoln, how he told things. That reminds me of a story, or it reminds me of something that happened in Springfield and so forth. And they would walk out upset. He had told them the truth, but they had to think about it. And in today's society, we don't want to think about anything. We want everything at the lowest common denominator. Have you seen those books, Computers for Dummies? You got one of those books, Dan? Have you seen Math for Dummies? And then, of course, the one that hurt me the most was the Bible for Dummies. See, we're all the time trying to water this thing down and make it as easy as possible for you to listen and hear, and we don't encourage anyone to think. And it's not going to work. Not going to work. And what's sad is that we have Christians who are hoping to get into heaven with the least amount of biblical information. Make it easy for me. And you know what I see when I read the terms of discipleship from Jesus' lips? He makes things hard. Have you ever noticed how a crowd is attracted to Jesus? I mean, he's healing, and everyone's coming, man. He's making free food. Man, let's come. Everybody come. Then he gets up and says, by the way, a man who does not love me more than his father or mother or wife or children is not worthy of me. And what happens to the crowd then? I am not deceived by big mega churches. They're popular. But Jesus is always trying to make us think, and he makes things difficult. He wants it to be that way. Now, Joseph, it says here, he pondered, he kept these sayings in mind. Sadly, Jacob, while Jacob pondered, he did not believe the dreams. If he had, he might have been spared the agony of believing that some animal had killed Joseph. So, here we have this conflict. This story ends with conflict. We wonder how it will all turn out. Joseph has four strikes against him. Number one, he is a talebearer. He likes to tell stories. He likes to tattletale about his brothers. That's how this story begins. And it's going to happen again. Joseph is always sent by the father, tell me what my boys are doing. They don't have a good reputation to begin with. And he comes back and he tells the truth about his brothers. But his brothers see him not as a truth teller, but as a tattletale. That's strike number one against Joseph. Number two, Jacob loves Joseph more than his brothers, which is Jacob's fault, not Joseph's, but he's held accountable for that. He has and wears this coat of special distinction. It would have been nice if Joseph had taken the coat of many colors and hung it up in his clothes closet and never wore it, but he wore it. And number four, he has these two dreams that reveal his future rise to superiority over the family. Now, as we go through this next section, we're going to see how things get worse instead of better. In fact, a series of bad things, one after another, will happen to Joseph before we see the final outcome. God's ways are mysterious. Before I conclude, let me say this. Spiritual leaders like Joseph, like David, like Jesus, like Paul, Peter, must expect opposition, both from within and from out of the church. Rebellion is an inbred characteristic in human life. Moses suffered it, David suffered it, Jesus suffered it, the apostles suffered it. Alexander the coppersmith harmed Paul, 2 Timothy 4:15. Diotrephes, who liked to put himself first, would not acknowledge the authority and leadership of the Apostle John, 3 John 9. And false teachers in Corinth challenged Paul's authority and teaching. Not everyone puts the Lord first. And how a leader responds to this challenge is critical. Sometimes it is important for a spiritual leader, elder or deacon, to have one blind eye and one deaf ear. And sometimes direct confrontation is necessary. Leaders never go out of their way to provoke opposition, but they are not surprised nor discouraged when it comes. The price of leadership is high. And Joseph is going to show us just how high it can go. And that concludes this first section, because in verses 12 to 36, Joseph is going to be put into bondage. And we'll study that next time.